Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Yeah, as you point out, this product really came through our 508H process from commodity groups and others.
Robert Bonney is Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation at USDA.
One of the issues is making sure the agents out in the field, crop insurance is a public-private partnership, and we need to make sure our agents have the tools they need to be able to sell these products. There's always a learning curve with new products like this. This is an innovation that we hope will work. It gives opportunities for producers to try new things, to think about ways that they can improve their stewardship. And as we roll it out and both farmers and agents get more familiar with it, our hope is that the folks will find utility in this approach.
This is Agriculture Today.
The 2018 Farm Bill introduced the effective reference price.
University of Illinois ag economist Dr. Gary Schnittke.
The effective reference price can be above the statutory reference price, which was used previous to the 2018 Farm Bill, if 85% of the Olympic average is higher than the statutory reference price. For soybeans, the statutory reference price is $8.40. If we're looking at the 2023 effective reference price, the years from 2017 to 2021 are used in the calculation of the Olympic average. Those market year average prices for those 5 years, first, the high and the low are not used. That would be $13.30 for 2021. That's the high. The low is $8.48 in 2018. The remaining three prices are averaged and multiplied by 0.85, giving us $8.13. $8.13 per bushel is below the $8.40 statutory reference price, so the 2023 effective reference price equals the statutory reference price, or $8.40. In 2023, for corn, soybeans, wheat, seed cotton, and peanuts, these effective reference prices equal the statutory reference prices. In 2024, however, it's highly likely that the corn and soybean effective reference prices will be above the statutory reference price for corn and soybeans. We are using projected market year average prices for 2022, as that year isn't done, of $6.70 for corn and $14.20 for soybeans. Those come from the January WASDE report. Using those prices, we get an 85% average of $4.01 for corn and $9.26 for soybeans, both of which are above the statutory reference price. Next year, or in 2024, the effective reference prices for corn and soybeans are likely to be $4.01 for corn and $9.26 for soybeans. Effective reference prices likely will be above the statutory reference price for corn for the next several years. If we look at projections made by USDA, the effective reference price will be above the statutory reference price from 2024 up till 2028. Those, again, have the possibility of increasing PLC payments and our county payments in coming years. As we're looking at the next Farm Bill, there are interest in changing certain parameters of that. One of those is increasing the statutory reference price. Rather than do that, we suggest making changes to the mechanism used to calculate the effective reference price. 85% of the Olympic average could be replaced with something higher, say 90 or 95%. The effective reference price is also capped at 115% of the statutory reference price. That cap could be increased to 20% or 25%. Changing the effective reference price has several advantages over changing the statutory reference price. First, the effective reference price will adjust to market conditions, and it's very difficult to set statutory reference prices, particularly in a time like this when structural change may have occurred in prices.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The important thing is that we all, producers, consumers, Congress, and the administration, stand together in support of a strong and resilient safety net.
Dr. John Bozeman is the ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee.
The next farm bill must work for those that feed, fuel, and clothe us. I hope today's hearings will bring these issues to light. I hope producers will hear the assurances they deserve, that the administration and Congress understand the need to strengthen the farm safety net. I know that if we listen to our farmers and ranchers, we will find a way to provide the right tools to manage risk now and in the future.
His opening testimony at a Senate Ag Committee farm bill hearing, Chairwoman from Michigan, Debbie Stabenow.
Some of our country's earliest agricultural policies date back more than a century, when Congress provided help to farmers to meet their credit needs. And later in the 1930s, when Congress provided assistance to address weather disasters and plummeting prices. A lot has changed since that time, but farming remains one of the riskiest businesses, and farmers still need these tools. Droughts, floods, and early thaw followed by a late freeze or other serious weather events can wipe out a farmer's bottom line. We certainly have seen that in Michigan, and I know my Senate colleagues have seen that as well. Global events can cause dramatic swings in commodity prices, risking farmers' livelihoods and harming communities. The climate crisis has made this threat even more dire for farmers across the country. I'm proud of common sense bipartisan reforms this committee has implemented over the last two farm bills to make the farm safety net fair and more equitable for all farmers. We ended direct payments that either paid too much or too little, regardless of actual losses. We placed a focus on risk management and improved crop insurance options, created new tools like permanent livestock disaster programs, and expanded coverage for underserved farmers through the non-insured crop disaster assistance program. We added more crops and improved upon new coverage options like whole farm insurance for diversified producers. We created the Agricultural Risk Coverage Program to protect against both price and yield loss. I'm also proud of the work of this committee and what we've done to secure the dairy safety net. In the 2018 Farm Bill, we dramatically improved support for dairy producers and expanded crop insurance options for dairy. So a lot has changed, though, since the passage of the 2018 Farm Bill. We've seen nearly $70 billion in ad hoc assistance to producers outside of the Farm Bill programs. And this is something we need to look at in terms of need and what's happened and as we go forward on all of these important programs. Over the last 3 years, we've seen 50 individual billion-dollar weather and climate disaster events. Think about that, 50 different events. And this has led to $13 billion in ad hoc disaster assistance for our farmers. Trade wars started by the last administration caused dramatic drops in crop prices and resulted in $23 billion in ad hoc trade and payments to producers. And the pandemic assistance packages passed by Congress delivered more than $31 billion in assistance to our producers. I raised many concerns during these ad hoc programs to make sure that they were distributed fairly, and I was concerned at that time that they were not distributed fairly, and that's something we certainly going forward are going to be keeping an eye on to make it sure it is fair.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
If we think about the pork industry, they've had some headwinds over the last couple of years.
Kevin Good with Cattle Facts at the recent Cattle Facts Outlook Seminar in New Orleans.
After record exports a couple of years ago, they've been able to export less product the last 2 years into China. Prop 12 in California, the Supreme Court has heard it but has not released the ruling. That's a major headwind. They've heard health issues. And obviously, higher input cost, as we think about grain, labor, interest, adversely affect pork and poultry production and profitability. So basically, we've got pork flat for this year. We see the broiler industry is continuing to expand as we go forward in here. With that said, tighter beef supplies, total supplies are probably going to be pretty flat in here, not only for this year, for the next couple years with higher input costs. So the supply side of the market still does look fairly favorable, even when we roll in those supplies of the other proteins. That said, if we think about the trade issues, this past year, very positive for beef, but underwhelming for both pork, did not get more product into China. In fact, it was less. And then for broilers, record high prices the first half of last year was definitely a headwind for them. So those numbers, actually, if we roll all three proteins together last year, we exported about 800 million pounds less than the year before. And we also imported more product, particularly we imported a lot more pork. So that balance of trade last year was about a billion pounds in the deficit compared to the year prior. You can see our estimates for this year. We think pork and poultry exports will improve. Beef will hold its own despite the fact we've got tighter supplies. You roll that together from a consumption standpoint, you can see that a year ago, and that's 22, that basically we had record per capita supplies. Despite that, all three proteins held together very nicely, although we would suggest we're kind of pushing the limit. We pushed the limit late in 2021 in beef. Last year we plateaued. Pork and poultry prices have probably pushed the limit at retail, and they probably have to come back down a little bit here with the economic environment that we're in. So we do see a little bit of relief as we go through this next year, and obviously over the next couple of years, we would suggest it would be a tick tighter. But it still is very big supplies. Turning our attention to the demand side of the market, one thing you can see that we've had a long-term march higher for retail prices. The long-term average is 4.5%. From 20 to 2019, and then from 2020 to 2022, it escalated. And then as you went to the end of last year and so far this year, in our opinion, we're going to be more of a flat line price. We've only got it up 1% this year. Doesn't sound like much when we talked about inflation continuing to be at 4 to 5% for the year. So we're losing a little bit of ground there. But we are going to suggest as we walk through the price outlook that we still have plenty of dollars, that we see that margin realignment that's going to allow for higher values for all classes of cattle. We would suggest as we go through this year, and obviously in the rearview mirror, demand for choice and prime product has been excellent, much better than what we've seen for the select product. We would suggest that choice select and choice prime spreads will continue to stay elevated as we go forward. One big driver here, as you think about it, if we're going to harvest 800,000 less head of cattle, we got to think about ribs and pismos, piece counts, particularly as we get to the holidays and also grilling season, that is going to continue to be a very big driver for the spread market.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Through my decade of service to USDA and now seeing impacts from the pandemic and more frequent and intense natural disasters, I've gained a much deeper understanding of the challenges our producers face and the ways our safety net programs are instrumental in keeping families on the land and helping them build more resilient operations.
Robert Bonney is Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation at USDA.
At FPAC, I have the honor to work with USDA's producer-facing agencies as we partner with farmers, ranchers, and forest owners to strengthen American agriculture and forestry. All four FPAC agencies, FSA, RMA, NRCS, and the FPAC Business Center, are engaging producers in new and more effective ways, streamlining program delivery, opening the doors of agriculture to all, and providing a more effective and holistic farm safety net. Since 2021, this administration has delivered pandemic assistance through CFAP and other programs in a way that provides invaluable assistance to producers while expanding the number of customers able to access aid. This approach and to CFAP and our other programs has meant we are reaching an estimated 50,000 more customers per year as compared to pre-pandemic levels. To expedite the distribution of the $10 billion in emergency relief funds provided by Congress in 2021, FSA and RMA leveraged existing data to streamline the application process and get money to producers faster than previous ad hoc programs. By year's end, FSA had processed more than 350,000 applications, totaling over $8 billion in payments to livestock, commodity, and specialty crop producers to help offset eligible losses from 2020 and 2021. We estimate that the design of the Emergency Relief Program and the Emergency Livestock Relief Program saved over 1 million hours of staff time and equally significant time for producers as well. The 2023 omnibus provided direction to FPAC to assist rice producers impacted by high input costs. FSA and RMA are working to build on our experience from the emergency relief we provided in 2022 to create a process that will be easy for producers and our staff. The omnibus also provided funds for broader ad hoc disaster payments. While we are thankful for what Congress has provided, the funding provided won't allow us to provide a comparable level of relief for producers with 2022 losses as compared to those impacted by 2021 and 2020 losses. Even with these ad hoc programs, I want to also reiterate that crop insurance remains a critical, a vital risk management tool for our producers. RMA is expanding coverage to more crops and producers than ever before. RMA's whole farm and microfarm policies are providing new opportunities for diversified producers and small-scale operators. For the livestock sector, the pasture, rangeland, and forage program now covers more than 250 million acres. USDA has also taken significant steps to support producers who rely on our farm loans. Thanks to passage of the Inflation Reduction Act, FSA was able to provide once-in-a-generation assistance to keep many of our borrowers in business. Approximately 11,000 delinquent direct and guaranteed borrowers had their accounts brought current with USDA's announcement in October. USDA also paid the next scheduled annual installment for qualified direct loan borrowers, giving them peace of mind in the near term, while Administrator Ducheneau and the FSA team consider other options to fully leverage the remaining assistance made available by Congress.
Bonnie testifying before the Senate Ag Committee recently. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Obviously, when you draw down that stocks-to-use, which is these blue bars, you know, you got to get price to rise up because we got to ration that usage.
Mike Murphy is with Cattle Facts at the recent Cattle Facts Outlook Seminar in New Orleans.
We've got our forecast, that gold bar out there that's, you know, May of 23. That's our forecast at 11.5% stocks-to-use. That's when the USDA will put out their first forecast for new crop. And the result of that, as we go into the fall, we're expecting prices to pull back between $5 and $5.50 a bushel and spend most of the fall in that range as we look at December corn futures. The thing that will be most impactful for the, you know, the Central Plains on the cattle feeding sector is going to be what corn basis does. And we've seen, obviously, record high corn basis levels, you know, some as high as 235 a bushel. We all know if we're sitting there between Garden City and maybe Scott City, Kansas, kind of that western Kansas region, a lot of historical basis levels of 20, 30 over. And yet they were $2 a bushel higher than that historical rate. If we can get the crop to be produced in that western corn belt, which as Matt alluded to, Nebraska's in good shape. South Dakota's in good shape to get the crop started off. But what about Kansas, eastern Colorado, and then the panhandle production? And there's some concerns there. So we are going to see a big break in corn basis going into the fall. To say that we're going back towards historical levels here at the first part of February is a little premature, right? A little premature. But we are going to see things a lot more favorable than what they would have been, say, this last fall when you were talking about, again, $2 basis in many parts. You're also going to see a little bit more differentiation. So when we think about what happened this last year and some of the concerns surrounding freight, availability of trucks, talking about relative to some of the rail challenges and the concerns of strikes, what do we run into? You really had a flat basis from, you know, southwest Kansas into the southern panhandle. We're going to get back to more of a normalcy. Well, you'll see that more distinct spread between those regions as we look at things. Let's finish up here from a CalCast standpoint and look at hay production. Both hay production and then the next slide is going to be hay stocks. They're at the smallest level since the mid-1950s. But I think the text box here on the slide explains a lot of this, right? We've had a 5 million head decline in beef cows just since 2000. We don't need as much hay production. Now, no doubt, when you look at a year like 2012, we all remember it very well, an extremely dry year across the country, had a huge impact on hay production. That's the type of thing that kind of spills over in here as we look at where we were this summer and had some of those very similar dry conditions.
Kevin Good is also with Cattle Facts.
We net that out, and what it shows is, from a per capita standpoint, last year we had record production. We had the biggest per capita supplies in 12 years. Despite that, we had record high retail beef prices on average last year. What's that tell us about demand? Demand continues to be historically strong. And so I think as we go into that section, we need to recognize that, hey, the proof of the pudding here is that price held up despite we had bigger supplies. You can see our forecast for this year is going to be tighter in 23. And if you take that out a couple more years, obviously, we're going to go back and challenge the smallest supplies that we've had from a historical perspective.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
America's farmers rely on the safety net created by the commodity, crop insurance, and credit programs that you oversee.
Dr. John Bozeman is the ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee and a member from Arkansas.
The tremendous financial risk inherent to agriculture has only increased since the last farm bill due to rapidly increasing input cost. The 2023 farm bill must provide our producers with the risk management tools required to farm and ranch in this new reality. The current safety net is frayed and is in dire need of meaningful reinforcement. When I meet with farmers across Arkansas, when I meet with farmers across the country, they share their hopes and fears with me. The hope is that their children will one day take over the family farm. The fear is, of course, that this will not happen through no fault of their own. Our producers are one trade war, one natural disaster or market downturn or geopolitical conflict away from having to sell the farm. I think I would characterize the farm community now as very uncertain, which is really a bad place to be. A newly reinforced safety net is essential if the United States would like our farmers and ranchers to continue to produce the most abundant, most affordable, and safest food supply in the world. Climate change and nutrition programs have seen dramatic increases in funding while farm safety net resources have dwindled. In 2021, USDA increased SNAP by $250 billion using a flawed process, as GAO recently reported. This last year, the reconciliation process added $37 billion in funding to USDA conservation, forestry, and rural development programs. However, neither the administration nor the reconciliation process have done anything to bolster the safety net. The risk in farming has never been greater. Farm production costs are estimated to be $460 billion this year, a record that tops last year's record. Crop prices are likely to decline in the coming years, but prices for many of our major commodities would have to drop sharply before the current Title I price loss coverage safety net would start to work. Corn prices, for example, would have to decline by 46% before farmers would receive assistance. By the time corn prices fell that low, the significant damage would have already been done. Farm bill programs collectively result in public benefits across the rural and urban landscapes. And we owe it to all Americans to ensure the bottom does not fall out of agriculture. We cannot only focus on certain programs and nor others when all farm bill programs are necessary to achieve economic sustainability for our farmers and ranchers in rural communities. The farm safety net can work for all producers, large or small, organic or conventional, farms established a century ago, or those just starting out. The important thing is that we all, producers, consumers, Congress, and the administration, stand together in support of a strong and resilient safety net. The next farm bill must work for those that feed, fuel, and clothe us. I hope today's hearings will bring these issues to light. I hope producers will hear the assurances they deserve, that the administration and Congress understand the need to strengthen the farm safety net. I know that if we listen to our farmers and ranchers, we will find a way to provide the right tools to manage risk now and in the future.
And the ranking member, Senate Ag Committee, John Bozeman. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
You know, in all our programs, we're always trying to make them work better for producers.
Robert Bonney is Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation at USDA.
And in the case of crop insurance, it's through looking for ways to provide new products through our 508H process. It's looking for ways to expand opportunities like whole farm and micro farm that provide opportunities for specialty crop producers and others. So with everything we're doing, we're looking, we're trying to open up the doors to make our crop, whether it's crop insurance or other safety net programs, available to as many types of producers to recognize the diversity of agriculture as we can. We think that remains important. And even with our ad hoc disaster programs, we structure them in a way to encourage folks to take advantage of whether it's NAP or crop insurance. So we think, again, crop insurance is absolutely vital.